But we kick things off this hour being joined right here in our studio at Seasons by Sean Lotch. He's from the Amera Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine. And Sean, so great to have you in studio with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've enjoyed your segment so much with Don and Paul and the Pulse Morning Show, and said we got to get Sean in here in person. So this is great for us.
Great.
Well, you've got some wonderful things going on. Your fall program, Dark, a chance for people to see that tomorrow night. Can you tell us a little bit of what folks will see if they head up tomorrow?
Sure. Yeah, tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. we have our the monthly program for September, which is called Dark, and we look at dark matter and talk a little bit about what it is, what we know about it, and how we're trying to find out more and learn what this exotic material is. One of the big things, of course, is the universe. Basically, if we sort of break it up into what we know and don't know, you might say, 4% is stuff that we know and understand, normal atoms that make up the things that we're used to, like the food we had for lunch or the chairs we're sitting in right now or the car you're driving or, you know, anything like that. But then there's about 25% or so of this stuff that we know it's there because it has gravitational influence on other stuff, but it doesn't give off any type of electromagnetic radiation. In other words, no light, no heat, no radio waves, X-rays, gamma rays, ultraviolet, things like that. So it's a very, as a result, it's called dark. And that dark matter is something that astronomers really are trying to understand.
And what's the difference, not that you can explain it quickly and easily, but what's the difference between dark matter and dark energy?
So dark energy makes up even a larger portion of the universe. That makes up probably roughly about 75 or 70%, somewhere in there. And that is actually propelling the expansion of the universe. So the universe expanded from the Big Bang, but what we're seeing is galaxies are speeding up. So it's sort of like an anti-gravity force. It basically is making the galaxies, instead of slowing down as the universe expands, it's pushing them away farther and faster. So that's that dark energy component. That is even more difficult for folks to understand. So most astronomers, cosmologists think we'll have a real handle on what dark matter is by the end of the decade, but they think dark energy will probably take another decade or two beyond that to really get a good idea of it, maybe even longer.
How does the world end? Not with a bang, but with a whimper. The theory for a while was that expansion of the universe would eventually go the other way, and maybe everything would contract and
right.
go back to where we started, but now it seems like, no, things are getting further away, and as you mentioned, even increasing in their speed.
Yep. Yeah, we see basically by watching supernovas and distant galaxies, you end up seeing that these galaxies are not only continuing to move away, but that rate of acceleration is, you know, sort of increasing. And they've observed that several times, so, I mean, basically that's what, you know, this dark energy is it's propelling that. And it is, again, one of those things that they're trying to really get a good understanding of.
We were talking with author Chuck Klosterman a couple of months back, and then he blew our mind on some ideas, especially when it comes to talking about things like gravity that we're pretty sure we know and understand, and then we find out that maybe we don't know it as well as we think. And that certainly applies to space, where, as we're finding out now, the more we learn, sometimes the rules don't apply.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for the most part, we know we have these rules in science, or these theories in science, that we have tested over and over again, and some of them hold very true for a long time. But there are parts of it that we still don't fully understand. And of course, that makes us change things. It's sort of like the whole Pluto issue. You know, I often get students, and, you know, we talk about Pluto, and they're like, well, why did they change it? And it's like, well, it doesn't quite fit the category of a planet anymore. It's not that it isn't part of our solar system, but we've discovered more things, and now we've come up with a new category. So we do end up making modifications along the way. And I always tell folks, you know, science is not just a compilation of facts. It's not, you know, a book that just has all the answers. Science is a process, and we're continually building on knowledge as we go, and that's how we really learn, and we continue to change things as we learn more.
We're talking with Sean Lotch of the Amera Astronomy Center, and I was telling you during the break, I was a big space fan as a kid. We have not been making many ventures into space. The shuttle program has ended, and now we have to hitch a ride with folks, and there are some sort of vague plans for the future, but from your perspective as a scientist, is human space flight still an important thing for us to do?
I think it is, because it of course, there's a human drive to explore. And while the shuttle program has ended, there is work currently on the Orion space transport system, which is sort of like a modified version of the original Apollo capsules, but it will be able to carry a larger payload and more people, and they've decided that that's sort of the next focus. But I think, you know, one of the other things they've been trying to do is sort of spur private industry into doing this, because oftentimes private industry can do it more efficient and cheaper than government. So you have industry like, you know, SpaceX and some of the others that have come along and are doing things and are making good successes. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to have a failure along the way, because this stuff is risky, but with no risk comes no reward. So, I mean, you know, it is like with the shuttle program. We had well over 100 successful flights. There were two, you know, tragic accidents, but those things do happen. But like I often tell my students, if any time someone came across from the old world to the new and a ship sunk, and we all automatically said, oh, we're not going to do that anymore because we lost a crew, well, the new world wouldn't exist as we know it. So, I mean, there is a constant need to explore. There is risk in that. But, you know, that risk does pay off in the long run.
One of the reasons we explore is to try and find somebody else out there. And we've been sending out messages now for, I guess, 60 or 70 years. And may or may not have heard some things back. It's tough when you're trying to decode radio waves and figure out what that's all about. But recently, some exciting news about the discovery of a neighbor, perhaps a little closer than we thought, a relative hop, skip, and a jump of about 4 million light years away in this new exoplanet that we found.
So there's a Proxima B. It is a planet going around Proxima Centauri, which is in the Alpha Centauri system. That's the closest star to us. It's about 4.3 light years away, or roughly 25 trillion miles away or so. Yeah, it's sort of a distance if you're thinking of driving there, flying there in a plane. Of course, traveling at the speed of light would take us about 4 years to get there. But it is the closest star system to the Earth, and finding this planet there was very exciting. And the other thing was that it's a planet similar in size to the Earth, about 1.3 Earth masses, so just slightly larger. It orbits the planet every 11 days. So folks shouldn't think that because it's similar in size that it's Earth-like. Again, it orbits every 11 days, so it's tidally locked. You have one side that faces the sun all the time and is in constant day. The other side is in constant night. It is in that Goldilocks zone, that habitable zone where water could exist. But again, conditions are going to be dramatically different there than Earth because of that, you know, tidal lock and that fast rotation.
And of course, for me, the fascinating thing about looking out into space, looking at the stars and going to the planetarium is that when we look out, what we're really seeing is the past.
Yeah, everything from the moon, which, of course, tomorrow we have our harvest moon happening, to, you know, which it takes a little over a second for light to reach us, to when you see a sunrise or a sunset. You're seeing something that took place a little over 8 minutes ago. And when we look at the stars, we're going back anywhere from 4 years at the closest to, you know, several thousand with our unaided eye, and then farther back when we look with telescopes, of course.
Dark on Friday night, and a wonderful program, too, on Sunday, Legends of the Night Sky.
Yeah, we have Legends of the Night Sky, Perseus and Andromeda, which tells the classic legend of Perseus and Andromeda, or Clash of the Titans, as some folks might know it, which is a Greek story about the constellations of the fall season. And also, we have a science lecture series on Thursday nights, the first Thursday of each month, because the planetarium now is a digital theater, and we can do much more than just astronomy. So astronomy is still a key. But, for instance, in October, we'll be doing a program that looks at the protein database and some of how and visualizing that in the dome and immersing people in that as well.
What got you interested in space and exploration and looking at what's out there?
So a couple things. When I was very young, I had an experience in a planetarium. Our high school had a planetarium. And when I went there as a second grader, the planetarium director there asked if anyone wanted to help. And I raised my hand, and he let me, you know, bring down the lights and turn on the stars. And I was kind of hooked from there. And about that same time, of course, just prior to that, Star Wars had come out. And of course, then Carl Sagan was on. So, yeah, a number of things kind of came together, and that got me sort of hooked. And when I went back to that high school as a student, I started working in the planetarium. So I've been doing this for, over 32 years now. Time flies.
If people want to go up this weekend and see either of the programs, should they call in advance?
They can get tickets online at astro.umaine.edu, or they can give us a call at 581-1341, and we can, you know, get them tickets that way, or they can show up at the box office either way.
Fantastic. Well, this is great. Sean, thanks so much for coming in. I hope we can visit again sometime, because I loved having these conversations.
Well, great. Thank you so much for having me. Sean.